We live in an unholy, polluted world, and God calls us to be holy. How in the world can we do it?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it may not be one of the favorite subjects of the church, but you better believe it is one of the most important subjects, something that every one of us needs to deal with, take hold of, reckon with. I'm talking about holiness. Now, would you say it with me? Would you, with a smile, a smile on your face, a sense of warmth and beauty in your heart, say it with me. Holiness. Yeah, not a good word for some, but it should be a good word for every one of us. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire today. Tuesdays, we focus on teaching, theology, apologetics, doctrinal controversies. And as a follow-up to yesterday's show where we talked a lot about sexual impurity and the junk going on in our society, I want to be as practical as I can with Scripture to help you be built up and strengthen in the Lord to live a holy life. If you want to call, comment, raise a question, maybe even share something that's happened in your own life by way of going from sin to holiness, the number to call, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. You know, you can thank God that He is holy, because if He was not holy, heaven would be the most terrifying place imaginable. Think of a being with all power, all might, that all the forces in the universe cannot oppose. Think of him being cavalier. Think of him being moody. Think of him having a short temper. Think of him having unclean desires. The created world would be an ongoing torture chamber. No, the most beautiful, wonderful thing to know is that God is holy. He is love because he's holy. He's compassionate because he's holy. Yeah, exactly right, Joey. Think of our God acting like the Olympian gods, the gods of Olympus. Think of that. Now, our God is holy, and he calls us to be holy, which is something beautiful. So I want to talk to you about that today. I also want to take a little bit more time talking about the Pope's comments. I have an article, probably come out tomorrow, dealing with the Pope, the Catholic Church, and the question of ordaining homosexual priests. We'll talk about that as well. 866-348-7884. But before that, some good news. Right before the show, an email came in from the International Monetary Funds Unit. A dear beneficiary, having reviewed all the obstacles and problems surrounding the transfer of your $4,500,000 United States dollars, so I'm about to get $4.5 million, I think. And then I've got an email from Mr. Ahmed Al-Salhi, and he has a lot of money I think he wants to give me. And then an email from Dr. Chin Chong, who also has email money he wants to get to me. This is just amazing. And then there's one from Frimpong Bume, and he's got $10.4 million to distribute. I've got a letter of apology from the government of Nigeria. They've got money to send me. Wow, wow, wow. And then, funnily enough, I have friends from years ago named Dave and Angela, and this was an email from Dave and Angela. They've won millions in the Euro jackpot, 101 million pounds, and they want to send me money. Wow. And then I've got stuff from the Arabian Exchange, the FBI. Matt, the FBI, Shakti Vardhan, and Mr. Fred Wang all want to contact me to give me money. Yeah. Junk mail. Amazing. Oh, Eric Holder. Eric Holder's trying to reach me as well. Amazing. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. Talking about holiness today, let me ask you a question. Since you've been a follower of Jesus, have you ever been tempted? Since you've been a follower of Jesus, have you ever sinned? Oh, you too? Since you've been a follower of Jesus, have you ever had a battle with the flesh? Oh, really? Well, join the club. That's all of us. So living holy, living lives that please the Lord, this is something that every one of us has to deal with. This is not just some abstract thing. This is not talking about, say, Calvinism or Arminianism. That's very important in many ways, or views of the end times. That's important in other ways, or the gifts of the Spirit of the day for today. That's important in other ways. We've talked about all these things. We've had debates and dialogue. We've had call-in day for people to discuss this. But there's no call-in day for, let's call in to discuss holiness. Is holiness important? Of course it's important. There's no debate here about what Scripture says. Yes, being holy is important. Hebrews 12:14, without holiness, no one will see the Lord. Ephesians 1 tells us that we have been predestined to be holy in Him. In other words, God's purpose when He created us as human beings was not just to be with Him forever, but to be a particular type of people, to be holy. And Oswald Chambers had something very interesting to say on this. And let me quote this, because we often think of salvation as being salvation from hell. And it is salvation from hell. But the reason salvation is salvation from hell is because it's first and foremost salvation from sin. Listen to what Oswald Chambers said. God has one destined end for mankind, holiness. His one aim is the production of saints. God is not an eternal blessing machine for men. He did not come to save men out of pity. He came to save men because He had created them to be holy. Holiness is being like Jesus in thought, word, and deed. Holiness is conforming to the very nature of God in character and in conduct. Holiness is beautiful. One of the early Salvation Army leaders, Samuel Logan Brengel, said that holiness is pure love. Now, a lot of us come from backgrounds. I really don't. This was never a major part of my life, but I know that many of you come from backgrounds where there was an external holiness that was negative and destructive. In fact, sometimes I've had people call in, or I've taught on this and asked students this question: tell me about some of the customs that you had in your church that you were judged by for holiness based on particular things. You know, if a man wore a wedding ring, he wasn't holy because that was wearing jewelry. If a woman had any makeup, she wasn't holy because, or if her hair was not a certain length, she wasn't holy. Or if the sleeve length of a dress was not all the way down past the wrist, the person wasn't holy. Or if the man had hair that went over the ears a little bit, then he wasn't holy. And then some had very, very, very strict standards, and you were judged mercilessly by these. Gossip was fine. Having an unclean heart was fine. Being judgmental and angry was fine. But, ooh, you dare cross the line with one of these man-made traditions, and you are not holy, you are out. Reminds me of one of my friends, missionary for decades in Italy, originally from Canada. He and his wife originally from Canada. And in some of the more traditional Italian Pentecostal churches where I've ministered over the years in Italy, the men still sit on one side and the women sit on the other side. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. You know, that's the way it still is in an Orthodox synagogue. In fact, there's a separation between the two, between the men and the women. And in Jesus' day, that would have been common, men sitting on one side, women on the other. When I preach in India, it's very common for men to be sitting on one side, women on the other. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing. If that's a custom that is part of the culture, fine. And if it makes sense in the culture, before the Lord, fine. But anyway, it's also customary in some of these churches that the women, almost all of them, will wear a black skirt and then a white blouse, and then they'll have like a doily in their hair in terms of their interpretation of 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter. That's all fine. If that's how they honor the Lord and they don't judge others by that. Well, my friend was in Italy for a service one time, one of these churches, and a woman comes in this super, super short black skirt. So it's a black mini skirt. She comes in wearing that and with a see-through white blouse. And then she goes and sits down with the women and puts the doily in her hair. In other words, anything but holiness, but she was conforming with the outward standards of you wear the black skirt and the white blouse and put the doily in your hair. That's not what holiness is about. Holiness is about a life that is pure. Being holy is again, being like Jesus in thought, word, and deed. And it's something that we should desire. The question is, how do we do it? There's a lot of temptation all around us. There's a lot of pull all around us. Even if you went and lived alone in a hut in some mountain somewhere, you'd still get tempted because you still have a working mind and there's still a spiritual realm. How do we live lives that are pure and holy in God's sight? What are keys to overcoming sin and doing it in a lasting way? Many years ago, I heard a teacher. I was going to school, doing my undergraduate studies at Queens College in New York. And sometimes, depending on when I'd be driving in for a class, there'd be a particular teacher, actually on the very station where I'm speaking to so many of you right now, across New York, and he'd be on teaching. And I remember him saying, look, he got the revelation, it's not him, it's Jesus. When he gets up in the morning, it's not him, it's Jesus. When he walks through the day, it's not him, it's Jesus. I remember saying to myself, oh, how do you do that? I mean, I believe it. I believe I've died to sin and it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. I believe that, but how do you just, okay, it's Jesus in me. It's not me, it's Jesus. And Jesus is living a whole and pure life through me. And I remember thinking, how do you grasp hold of that? So I don't just want to talk theoretically today. I want to talk practically. You say, yeah. But nothing ever changes. Oh, that's not true. Many things do change. And the language of faith is a language that trusts God to do the impossible. Maybe you've been in a rut for 30 years. Maybe you've had an addiction that you're ashamed of for 15 years. Maybe you can't seem to see change or growth in your life in any way after 10 years of trying. Well, I know you can get discouraged, but I want to declare the gospel is true. Jesus himself said to those Jews who had believed in him, if you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed, and you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Jesus himself said, same context, John the 8th chapter, that whoever commits sin is a slave to sin, but if the Son sets you free, you are free. Indeed, before I was saved, I was a slave to sin, and doing the right thing was the exception to the rule. Since I have been saved since 1971, I am a slave to righteousness. That's what I must recognize and take hold of and walk in. And doing what is right is the rule of my life. Sinning is the exception to the rule. Do you follow me? Maybe you used to go out, get drunk, sleep around with other people. Maybe you used to lie all the time. Maybe you were an angry, mean-spirited person and you got saved and you don't drink anymore and you don't sleep around outside of wedlock and you're actually long-suffering and gentle with other people. You're a saved, changed person, but do you still sin? You perhaps think a wrong thought. Do you get short with someone one day? Do you neglect acts of compassion towards others? Do you choose the way of the flesh rather than prayer? Yes, but that's not essentially who you are. Those are shortcomings, those are failures, but that's not essentially who you are. Who you are is a new creation in Jesus. We come back, I want to start laying out practical principles, biblically based practical principles that will help you overcome, that will help you grow in God, that will help you be holy. The word sounds forth yet again. The Lord says, be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. We'll be back. We're going to give you some stuff to sink your teeth into today right here on the Line of Fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are talking about holiness today on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. God's Word not only points out the disease, God's Word gives an infallible cure. 866-34-TRUTH, my website, askdrbrown.org. Last month, we had pre-trib call-in day, and I said later that day or in the next few days, I'd put up some resources, websites, books that would explain some of the reasons I personally don't hold to a pre-trib rapture, although I don't divide over that. And I neglected to do it. I chatted with a colleague of mine at our school of ministry and asked if he'd help me put that together, and then I dropped the ball on it. I was reminded, and we finally got it up, so my apologies for the delay. So if you go to AskDrBrown.org and just click on the latest blog, you'll see some useful sources on a non-pre-trib rapture, a few websites and a few books, and then some discussion where folks are adding in some extra info. So it's AskDrBrown.org, click on latest blog. Also, to read my ongoing public interaction with statements by respected Pastor John MacArthur on the things of the Spirit and abuses in the charismatic church, and then someone from his ministry replying and me replying, make sure you read my latest article, Time to Talk, Not Fight, a response to John MacArthur's ministry. That's, again, AskDrBrown.org. Just click on latest article. All right. Before I get to any calls, let me lay out a few simple foundational principles. The first is this. We've got to recognize the ugliness of sin. We've got to recognize the ugliness of sin. Paul writes about the deceitfulness of sin. I once heard Derek Prince say the problem with deception is that it's very deceiving. We need to step back and recognize how ugly, how destructive, how defiling sin is. What was it? I don't remember. I don't see a lot of movies, but there was one where there was read about it and maybe seen, you know, a picture image from it or something. But this person looks like a beautiful woman, but she's actually some monster or something. I don't even remember what it is, but that's how we have to look at sin. That's how we have to look at it, that it may look beautiful and it may look appealing and it may promise certain things. And for a period of time, it may bring a feeling of satisfaction. Oh, it's going to be fleeting. It never really satisfies, but it may bring a high. It may bring a release. It may promote you in certain ways. It may empower you in certain ways, but it is ultimately destructive. It is ultimately poison. It would be as if you're out in a desert and suddenly you find this well of water, and it's pure and pristine water and it's sparkling. You've never seen anything that looks that good, and you begin to drink it, but within seconds of it getting into your system, it becomes rancid, acid, and it burns you alive from the inside out. That's a picture of sin. That's a picture of the destructive and ugly power of sin. You've got to demystify it. That affair that's pulling on you, that website that's pulling on you, those opportunities to make money in an illicit way, those carnal, fleshly ways to get ahead, that cry for vengeance and hold on to your bitterness, and whatever it is that appeals to you, you've got to demystify it. You've got to step back. And Father, I pray in Jesus' name that you would open the eyes of these listeners right now. Open their eyes, open their hearts, open their minds, and help them to see the ugliness of sin. Help them to see past that image. You know, friends, somebody may be tempted with sensual images, and you're checking out of a grocery store, and there is some picture of some bikini-clad beauty, and she's smiling at you. Sir, she's not smiling at you. She's not smiling at you, nor is she offering herself to you. And if she met you, she wouldn't give you the time of day. And ultimately, what do you want? Anyway, you want a fleshly relationship, and you have sex with someone you're not married to, and what does it lead to? It leads to shame. It could lead to sexually transmitted disease. It could lead to all kinds of other consequences. The one guaranteed thing about sin, always, without failure, is at the end, those who live by it must say, it wasn't worth it. Those who give themselves to sin, the one guaranteed thing, in the end, they will say, it wasn't worth it. In my book, Go and Sin No More, I have a chapter called The Acharit, The Final End, The Final Consequences of Sin and Righteousness. I actually preach that message around the world based on a Hebrew word, acharit, which speaks of that which comes after, final consequences or after effects, the end. The chapter is called The Fateful End. I preached that for years, only to come back to a country or to a city many years later and have someone come up to me and say, I remember that message, acharit. It changed my life. And it's not my brilliant message, it's scriptural truth. And the scriptural truth is, if we could see that which comes after and the final consequences of our actions before we gave ourselves to them, we would never do many of the things that we do. That's chapter 4 in my book, Go and Sin No More. And I start the chapter out with a quote from a woman named Carmela Bushbot. She was released from a prison in Israel January 3rd, 1996. She had killed her husband after years of being physically abused. And she said, remorse is so bitter. I would give everything just to turn the clock back. Maybe to have never gotten into the marriage she got into. That's the testimony of sin. When we give ourselves to it, I would give everything just to turn the clock back. The good news is, you can stop the clock now. You can get off the merry-go-round now. You can turn from what's wrong now. And you can, with God's help and grace, live a life where you are not a slave to sin. 866-34-TRUTH. I'll take some calls when we come back. Let me encourage you strongly to get my book, Go and Sin No More. The book is available together with an audio series where I teach on this extensively. And the book and the audio series would sell for over $30 combined. Your gift of any size will send them out to you. The audio series is on one CD. You can listen to it on your computer or your MP3 player. And the book, over 300 pages long, practical, filled with grace, helps you to overcome legalism as well. Number to call, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. If you miss any part of the rest of this broadcast, just go to my website later, AskDrBrown.org, and click on the latest audio later today. You'll be able to listen to the entire broadcast. Come on, friends. God's living inside of you by His Spirit. Let's live lives that are pleasing in His sight.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Now, come on, let's be honest. Was sin ever really worth it long term? Did you ever disobey God? Did you ever give yourself to the flesh, compromise standards? Did you ever do that? And then long term say, boy, I'm glad I did. That was a good move. No, there's shame. There's remorse. There's often the negative fruit of sin that is so destructive. But when you say no to sin, when you say yes to God a month later, a year later, 10 years later, you're so glad that you did. 866-348-7884. 866-34-TRUTH. Talking about holiness, practical steps to holy living. The first one is this. Recognize the ugliness of sin. It's a liar. It is a seductive liar. It will paint one picture of how beautiful. Oh, if you just do this. Oh, this is what you need. And then when you do, it's got a dagger. It'll stick in your back. And the worst thing is sometimes that dagger doesn't show up for a while. Sometimes that poison doesn't manifest itself for a while. And then you end up in a situation you never planned to be in. What do they say about sin? It'll take you further than you plan to go. It'll cost you more than you plan to pay. It'll keep you longer than you plan to stay. That's the nature of sin. That's why Jesus died, to set us free from our sin. I want to give you several more practical principles to live by to help you overcome. 866-348-7884. Let me go to the phones with Karen in Yonkers, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Brown, for taking my call. You know, I was baptized in the Holy Spirit in 2000, and for the last 3 years I backslid, and I'm really having a hard time getting back on track. I don't care to go into the details. You know, there's a movie, Stigmata, that somebody told me about, and, you know, somebody, I don't watch TV much anymore. I do spiritual stuff on the internet. And it's just, it's like I'm brain dead. I know the right thing to do. What does Paul say in the Bible? I want to do the right thing, but I don't do it.
Mm.
I'm having a hard time getting back. But just listening to the, you know, what you said about sin, I really wish I could, turn the hand, you know, the clock back. I'm struggling. I don't, you know, I'm angry at God. He knows I need a church family. That's my question. I've been doing, you know, I've been to maybe 5 or 8 churches over the last, I don't know, 35 years. I left Roman Catholic when I was about 12, and you know, got into alcohol and drugs and so on and so forth, promiscuity, and I was born again about 2000, and I backslid in the last 3 years, not with everything, but one thing. And
let me just understand this though. You're angry with God because you can't find a church. Or
I want a non-denominational. I mean, I get what I need on the radio, and I get what I need on the internet, but I need people, other Christians.
Right.
My
so what you
the only born again Christian who's in North Carolina. I don't know anybody else who's a Christian.
Right. All right. But you live in Yonkers, right?
Do you have to go to church in order to? Do I have to go to church someday?
It's not a matter of have to. It's a matter of you need to live this out in community. It's a matter of you're not going to make it on your own, especially with the ups and downs that you've had. Write this verse down. You have a Bible at home, correct?
Right.
All right, write this verse down. 2 Timothy 2.
Yeah, I have paper right here. 2 Timothy,
2:22.
2
Timothy
2:22,
which tells us, it's written to Timothy, but we can all apply it. It tells us to flee from certain things, right? Youthful lust, meaning the, you know, the pulls on the flesh. And then right. To pursue what's right, but to do it together with others of like heart. Listen, Karen, I want to send you my book, Go and Sin No More, to at least personally help you. But here's the other thing. Find others who are born again. There are plenty of born again churches in Yonkers, and just go and meet some friends. And even if it's not your perfect everything, get in a community with other believers.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I just went over to my Twitter account. That's at Dr. Michael L. Brown. Michael L. Brown. Make sure you get the two L's there. At Twitter, and there was a question from Silas. What if you hate your sin? You know it's wrong, but you can't stop sinning. And I wrote back to him and said, in Jesus, you can stop sinning, but often it's a battle. And then I refer him to my book, and if he can't afford it, that we'll gladly send it to him. Look, in this world, there's going to be testing, there's going to be trial, there's going to be temptation. That's why the psalmist said, I've hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. That's why the psalmist said, how can a young man keep his way pure? By taking heed to your word. That's why Jesus himself taught that if we continue in his word, we'll be his disciples indeed, and we'll know the truth. The truth will set us free. But there are battles, and there are temptations. If there are no battles and there are no temptations, if there was some magical thing that happened once we were born again, and voila, there it is, amazing, incredible, we never get tempted to sin again, then the New Testament wouldn't deal with these issues all the time. Then Paul wouldn't have been dealing with them among the believers. Don't feel condemned if you've been tempted and fallen. Don't feel condemned if, in fact, probably the things you think you're the only one in the world that's ever struggled with, plenty of other people struggle with them. 866-34-TRUTH. Look, the fact of the matter is this. The fact of the matter is this. We can show up at our lovely service, and some circles, everyone dresses really nice. Others, they dress down. But, you know, people look good, and everybody looks fine. You don't know what's going on in that person's private life. You don't know what's going on in their thought life. You don't know what their internet history looks like. Oh, everybody looks great. You don't know the struggles many people are having. We would not be having so many public scandals if people were doing so well in their private lives. That's a fact. So don't be condemned as if you're the only one in the world struggling with it. Some of you are nodding your head as I'm speaking. Of course, that's just a common way of thinking and a common tactic of the enemy to get us to think like that. The fact of the matter is, there is new life, there is victory, there is new birth. God does write his words on our hearts, and we are changed. So, some principles for you. Number one, recognize the ugliness of sin. Recognize its destructive power. That beautiful-looking bottle of pure water is actually not pure when it's mixed with sin. It's actually poison that will kill you. Number two, you are a saint. You are a holy one, and you are called to be holy. The primary way when Paul would write his letters and address believers, he wrote to the Hagioi, the holy ones, Hagios, holy. He wrote to people and called them saints. The normal way that we're addressed in the New Testament is not sinners. If you go through the scriptures, and I lay this out clearly in my book, Go and Sin No More, if you go through the scriptures, the sinners are the enemies of God. I do not have the consciousness in my own heart and life that I am a sinner. I have the consciousness in my own life that I am a child of God, born by his spirit, a holy one set apart to him. Now I'm called to live that out. We are called holy, and we are called to be holy. But the moment we're born again, we are set apart to God. This is something that our hyper-grace friends get right. We are sanctified the moment we're born again. We are set apart to God as holy. And you need to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm a saint. I'm a saint. I'm a holy one. I'm a saint. That doesn't really work with what's going on in my life. If you're born again, if you're a child of God, you're a saint. Now, you may be living sinfully, and God may rebuke you as such and rebuke me as such if I was living sinfully, but you are a saint. You need to change your way of thinking. You need to change your way of relating to life. Look, if you're, let's say you're trying to lose weight, and your whole mentality is, I'm a glutton. I am a glutton. I'm a glutton. Glutton, glutton, glutton. I'm a fat pig glutton. That's who I am. Oh, you're going to do really well on your next diet, aren't you? You're going to do really well the next time you're tempted to eat some food you don't think is healthy or you know is not healthy. I'm a glutton, and that's who I am. You have that mentality. It's going to be very difficult to live differently. But if actually, truly, you were a disciplined person who had foolishly given way to the flesh a few times and you had gotten overweight, but you're really not a glutton at heart. You're a disciplined person at heart. You say, hey, that's not who I really am. No, I'm not that person that's 100 pounds overweight. No, I'm not that person who's eating myself into an early grave. That's not who I am. You say, that just sounds like positive thinking. Well, in my illustration here, it may be, but I'm talking about new covenant realities. We have died to sin in Yeshua. We have been given new life. The Holy Spirit does live inside of us. And when we're called saints, and that's the way it is in some churches, probably more in some cultures than others, but you know, pastor may get up in the morning, how you doing, saints? What if he got up and said, how you doing, sinners? And I'm the chief sinner. You say, didn't Paul say that he was the chief sinner? In the context when he wrote this in 1 Timothy 1, it's explicitly talking about his life before he was a believer, how he persecuted others, how he was a blasphemer and a violent man. But God, to demonstrate his mercy, even on the worst of sinners, had mercy on him to set a pattern that Messiah Jesus can save the worst of sinners. Now, there is new life we have. Was Paul saying, I'm the worst sinner there is. I'm the chief of sinners. Yeah, I know the Greek is present tense. That Jesus had mercy on the worst of sinners on sinners of whom he is the worst. But again, the context is indisputably clear that he's talking about his life before he was saved. As his life as a believer, he talks about his holiness. He talks about his godliness. He talks about the example he set for the Thessalonians, for the Corinthians, for others. And he told the people to follow him. You say, well, didn't he say in Romans 7, I do the things I don't want to do? He's really talking about going under a legal system of righteousness. And when you live like that, you're always falling short because you know what's right and you're falling short and so on. I have a whole appendix in my book, Go and Sin No More, that just deals with Romans 7 and the controversy there. What we know is this. There's no controversy about Romans 6 that we've died to sin and we have to give our bodies as vessels of holiness to the Lord. And there's no controversy about Romans 8 that by the Spirit we can now live godly lives in Messiah Jesus. So wherever you land on Romans 7, it's sandwiched between Romans 6 and Romans 8. So number one, recognize the ugliness of sin. Number two, understand that in the Lord you are a saint. You are a holy one. You have been born from above. Maybe you had a very superficial conversion experience, but you need to deepen that, obviously, through communion with him. A third thing you need to do then is renew your mind. Renew your mind. How do you do that? You get the junk out and you put good stuff in. No one is making you think certain thoughts. I mean, maybe you have a real mental issue, a chemical imbalance, or maybe you were demonized and need deliverance or something, but I'm talking to everyone else, okay? No one is making you think certain thoughts. You can renew your mind. You can choose to turn the TV off. You can choose to get away from the internet. You can choose to put the cell phone down. You can choose to put the trash down. You can choose to meditate on the word. You can. You can choose to fill your mind with good things and pure things and holy things. You can choose to read things that edify and listen to things that edify and watch things that edify and build yourself up. And then you spend quality time alone with God. You pray, you worship him, you adore him, you get in his presence. When you're in his presence, you will be changed. Renew your mind. Renew your heart. And then don't play games with sin. And at the show yesterday, I said, don't play with sin. Don't cater to sin. Don't cut it back. Cut it out. Remember Jesus said, speaking metaphorically, if your right eye causes you to sin, cut it out and throw it away. Cut it out and throw it away. If your right hand causes you to sin, chop it off. Throw it away. Yes, he's speaking metaphorically, but his point is deal with it ruthlessly. Deal with it the way you deal with a poisonous snake that was in your baby's bedroom. You don't just say, oh, cute, cute little snake. No, then you got a poisonous snake. You're not going to let your kid play on the floor. You're not going to leave the room. You're going to get your kid out of there, and then you're going to kill that snake, and you'll probably kill it 10 different ways until it's chopped up and dead. That's after you deal with sinful strongholds in your life. So people say, man, I used to drink a lot. I'm so weak. When I go to the bar, man, I keep getting drunk. You're not weak. You're stupid. Get out of that place. This is my job. Then get another job. That's the point Jesus is making in the Sermon on the Mount. Flee. Flee the evil desires of youth. And by the way, there's such a thing as a dirty old man. Flee these fleshly unclean things. Come out from those things and then pursue. Pursue righteousness. Pursue holiness. Pursue these things out of a heart after God. And as you do that, together with other brothers and sisters of like heart, you'll see, wow, my life is really changing. My life has really changed. We'll take some calls. We get back on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire as we talk about holiness, principles of holiness, ways to live holy and godly lives by the life and power of the Spirit. I'll let you know about resources we have that can help you with that in a moment. First to the phones, Raf in Woodbridge, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, I never really listened to the whole program on the internet. I always catch a piece of it, but man, you're on point. And I got a question. I'm a part of a fellowship of Pentecostal churches. Never heard preaching like this in my life. It's so on point and so biblically based.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, you know, the more I study the Word and really lay hold of Jesus and seek more of him to live a holy life, the more, as I'm listening to the preaching that I love in my church, I feel like we toe the line of legalism. And it's a Pentecostal church, but a lot of the conversation sometimes is about, yeah, well, those sinners, and when sinners, this and that, and I'm thinking, well, we're all sinners, you know? And I wondered if you could speak to that. You know, I don't want to go to as far as to this once saved, always saved doctrine, Mr. MacArthur, you're talking about earlier, you know.
Yeah, now just to be clear, John MacArthur holds to what's called perseverance of the saints, that those who are truly saved will be kept by God to live holy lives, as opposed to however someone lives, it doesn't matter. They still get in. Pastor MacArthur would teach against that. But, Raf, let me say this. We need to have hearts of compassion towards those who don't know the Lord. That's the first thing. Remembering the mercy he had on us. And legalism, the way I would define it, is laws without love. It is rules without relationship. It's standards without a savior. It's externally imposed religion. It's religion from the outside in. Here are a bunch of standards you have to live by, put on us, as opposed to change coming to us from the inside out. That's the way of being renewed in the gospel. I'd love to send you my book, Go and Sin No More, just as a gift, because I have a whole chapter on the perils of legalism, and then chapters on no condemnation, and chapters on the beauty of holiness, as well as a real strong message of purity. So I think this would help put things together for you. And again, just want to send it to you as a gift. You can read it and share it with your friends, all right?
Thank you so much.
All right, stay right there, and Dwight will get your info to send you the book. Gail in Tewksbury, Massachusetts, thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Brown. I have a conundrum over here. My husband and I have been born-again Christians for quite some time, and but we have a disability. Both my husband and I suffer from multi-chemical sensitivity, and it's very difficult for us to go to church because of the simple reason that most people wear these fragrances, and they have them in the soaps and everything.
And both you and your husband have the condition?
Yes, we do, and we tried on several occasions to call various churches to you know, explain the situation, and they say, well, we can't guarantee that people won't come in because it's a, like a public place.
Right.
And we've gone to several places and have explained the situation as we've been there, started attending them. And it seems that folks wore more of this, of these fragrances, and we've had to get out of there because I got very sick one time, and it went into my lungs. And what happened was it...
Well, Gail, let me just...
my olfactory in my brain. I have no sense of smell or taste.
Yeah, so let me just...
What do I do? Am I sinning by not going to...
No, you're absolutely not sinning by being able to attend when the Word of God calls us to worship together and fellowship together. It's in a life-giving way. If someone has a disability, and how striking that both you and your husband suffer from the same thing. Obviously, it's not a sin. There are things that you miss out on. So what we need to do is this. Of course, you have the benefit of online community. You have the benefit of interacting with different believers online or listening to radio and things like that. So you're not totally isolated. But the best thing is if you call around to some churches that seem to believe the things you believe and ask them if they have house group meetings. And if you could talk to one of the house group leaders, see if you've just got 8-10 people meeting for fellowship, you can become friends with some of them. They can come over to your place as well. And they can have parameters that can work with 10 or 12 people or 8 people or 15 people, that everyone knows certain things not to wear to the meeting. And if a new person's coming, they're told, hey, we have someone in our meeting. You can't do that in a church service if you're going to have 100 or 500 or 1,000 people. But in a house meeting, you can. So find out from any of the churches that seem to hold to the same things you believe. Give them a call and say, hey, we've got a disability because of which we can't be in a large public setting, but do you have house meetings? Do you have home groups? Do you have anything like that? Many churches do. It's very common. Some have almost entirely house groups or home groups. And in that context, then you'll be able to develop friendships. You'll be able to have people to lean on when you have special times of need, and people that can pray with you, even for healing. And Father, we pray for Gail and her husband that you would touch them as well, and that your healing would go through them and reverse whatever this condition is so that they can thrive in healthiness and wholeness. In Jesus' name. And again, Gail, if there's not an immediate healing or change, then take the counsel I gave you. Find out church that has home fellowships. Then see if you can get in touch with one of the home leaders and say, hey, you're interested in having fellowship and being part of a Bible study. Tell them the situation. I'm sure they'll gladly help and work with you. All right, God bless. Thanks so much for calling. And please, please don't feel condemned or inferior because of the place in which you find yourself. All right, friends, I can't strongly enough recommend my book, Go and Sin No More. You say, well, if you recommend it so strongly, why are you selling it? Well, it actually does cost us money to produce it, but it's yours for your gift of any size. That's how much we want to get it out to you. Your gift of any size. Now, here's what we're doing. The book is over 300 pages, practical, life-giving, grace-filled, filled with the Word. And in the book, also, with the book, excuse me, we have an audio series where I taught over 10 hours with some of the key main themes from the book. So we've packaged that all together. It's over a $30 value, but yours for your gift of any size. So those who can be generous and help with a larger donation, you'll help those who have less. This is where we can get these out to the maximum number of people. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. By the way, comments about the Pope, gay priests, and all that, I'm going to have an article coming out on that. Look for that in the next 24 hours. My bottom line today, holiness is beautiful. And in Jesus, God has made you all over again to be holy, just like Him. We live in an unholy, polluted world, and God calls us to be holy. How in the world can we do it?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, here's why I love live radio. We had everything planned out for the second hour. Towards the end of the second hour, I was going to introduce a special guest from Israel, whom I just met face-to-face a few minutes ago, but it so happens that his flight got in earlier. He got to our offices earlier, and I said, well, we're just going to change where we are going with the broadcast today. So if you want to hear more about holiness, I just spoke about it for the first hour. We do have some resources we'll make available to you later on. So you go to my website later today, askdrbrown.org, click on the latest audio, and you'll hear some practical teaching, an hour's worth on holiness. But we are shifting gears, and even though it's Tuesday, because it's my program and it's live, instead of waiting for Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, like we normally would for an Israel-related story, I have a guest from Israel, Jonathan Feldstein, and he is a representative for the Magen David Adom, which is the Israeli Red Cross. And they are on the front lines in a unique way that it's hard for us even to relate to living here in America. A friend of mine with the Billy Graham Association was over in Israel recently. I sat down with him, and he said, you've got to meet Jonathan. You've got to talk to him. You've got to connect with him. And when I heard he was coming into our very city, I said, okay, let's do it. He was kind enough to come up to our studio. So, Jonathan, great to have you on the air.
I'm glad to be here. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Now, you weren't born in Israel, were you?
No, I was born in New York.
Born in New York. Yeah. What part of New York?
Born in Manhattan. Grew up in Queens, well, for the first year, and then grew up the rest of my early childhood in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. All right, so I'm born in Manhattan.
Okay.
Grew up on Long Island.
Okay.
All right, when did you move to Israel?
Next week will be 9 years.
9 years living in Israel.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. And tell our listeners exactly what you do there.
So I'm the representative for the American nonprofit, American Friends of Magen David Adom, that raises money and generates support to provide resources for the ambulance service, first response, EMS, and the blood services of the state of Israel.
All right, and what would you say is different and unique about what happens in Israel as compared to, say, what we might know about the Red Cross here in America?
Well, Red Cross in America is only typically a blood and humanitarian service. So that's automatically what's unique, is that when you call for an ambulance in Israel, you're calling an ambulance that's dispatched by Magen David Adom. That's also by law. American Red Cross has other organizations that also do the blood services. And as you know, there are many, many international humanitarian services. But by law, Magen David Adom is Israel's only ambulance service, EMS, blood service. And so because of the unique situation in which we live, there's not a lot of margin for error.
Got it. And when you talk about first responders, thankfully, there haven't been as many terrorist attacks in recent years as in years before. But you're the ones then that it's always going to be your organization, because the ambulances that are the first official ones to be showing up where there have been terrorist attacks. And that's a different world than most Americans can relate to.
That's 100% correct. And even not even just when there is, in fact, a terror attack. I mean, thank God there have not been recently. But people need ambulances for many other reasons. There was an interesting story in January 2009. I was organizing a blood drive for a group of American students in Jerusalem, and a rocket flew from Gaza at a high enough trajectory to trick the air raid siren in Jerusalem. Now, there was no rocket that landed. No one was hurt. But just an indication of how Israelis feel about the organization, over 300 phone calls were registered that first minute, calling the dispatch, asking what was going on, as if we were public information.
Really? All right. Friends, when we come back, I want to talk with Jonathan about the work they're doing, but I also want to talk through some issues and separate fact from myth on the ground in Israel. And if you have a call, 866-34-TRUTH.
Cleansing flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My friends, I have a special guest in the studio with me, Jonathan Feldstein. He's the Israel-based representative of American Friends of Magen David Adom, which is the Red Cross of Israel. And he's been living in Israel as an American, now Israeli, living in Israel for 9 years. If you have a question, if you've heard things about Israel that disturb you, or why don't the Israelis do this, or why are they doing this to the Palestinians, or you want to find out more, today's a great day to call, because he's a man who's involved not in the military, but in compassionate service. And he'll give you perspective from someone living on the ground. 866-348-7884. Jonathan, you live in Ephrat.
Correct.
In Judea. All right. It sounds pleasant and nice. Maybe some Christians have heard about it because of Rabbi Shlomo Riskin and his notoriety in a positive sense, but most Christians don't know about it. And Ephrat, Judea, oh, sounds lovely. You're living right in the thick of hostility, controversy. Tell us about Ephrat, and tell us about Judea and why this is so controversial.
Sure. Well, first of all, fortunately, it's not so. It's not a lot of conflict where I am. My front yard crosses a valley, and I see the south, and I hear the southern part of Bethlehem. I mean, we're really that close. The reality is, in much of Judea and Samaria, there's daily interaction between Israelis and Palestinians. That's very human. That's very civil. That's very, very much about coexistence. And today, yesterday, Israeli and Palestinian negotiators started talking in Washington, and who knows where that's going to go. But I can tell you, on the ground, there are often very, very civil, if not warm, relations between us.
And when people hear of Judea, Samaria, they hear you say it. They think back to biblical days. But most people would hear that today as West Bank,
yeah,
or occupied territories.
Right.
So you say, though, that there's civil interaction, Palestinians and Israelis. Are we being fed misinformation through the media, or you just happen to live in a more peaceful part of the region?
Both. Definitely there's misinformation. It's a complicated situation to understand. And so it's misinformation, and there's also disinformation. But the reality also is that, yes, there are extremists on all sides, but the simple reality is, on a day-to-day basis, Palestinians and Israelis live together, overlap in work situations. If I need to get my car fixed or a flat tire, the lovely Palestinian Mohammed who works in the car shop has been terrific, and he'll, especially if my wife shows up, he always takes really good care of her to make sure, apologizing if he doesn't have the right kind of tire. Please come back tomorrow. That's how things should be.
Now, if Muhammad was sitting here, would he give the same presentation? Would he tell the same story that you are, or would he talk about oppressive actions and checkpoints and so on and discrimination?
If he told the real story, then he would not use his full name, because it would perhaps come back and haunt him and his family. Look, checkpoints, there really aren't that many. I mean, I drive all around the place, and the main time you see checkpoints are when you leave Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, crossing the Green Line into what's pre-67 Israel, and that's like an international border crossing where people who don't belong crossing over the border are checked. Just like I flew into the airport today, I had to take off my shoes and belt and all that stuff to check and make sure that I'm not somebody who's going to another place or getting on a plane to do harm. And I know that that can be seen as civilly frustrating and even dehumanizing. And I do feel for that. I really do. But on the other hand, I also recognize that the Israeli authorities let people who are not citizens of the state of Israel come in to go shopping and working and have an equally share, even to the hospitals, and share in the benefits of living next door to the wonderful country that we have.
All right. When there was talk about the calls, there are always calls to boycott Israel for one thing or another, but the whole flotilla controversy with Gaza, and then Israel is oppressing the people of Gaza and so on. And yet I'm reading accounts of humanitarian aid that was being brought in on a regular basis. So in terms of specifically what your organization does in Israel, talk about that aspect, because we certainly don't hear about it. Maybe caring for a Palestinian baby, maybe someone that's wounded in an attack. Do you discriminate against these kids, babies, in the Israeli hospitals? Do you first take care of the Israelis, and if the little scraps left over, throw them to the Palestinians? How do you operate?
Look, there's full equality. Judaism and the state of Israel are about saving and sanctifying life. That's the bottom line. Things that happen in the defense of our lives are very unfortunate on both sides. But there's no discrimination. Palestinians come to Israeli hospitals. When Ken was with me in Israel recently,
from Billy Graham Association,
right?
Yeah.
From Billy Graham. So we went down to the checkpoint with Gaza and went in and saw people coming back and forth who were shopping. You know, Gaza. We're not talking about West Bank. We're talking about Gaza, which is run by Hamas, a terror organization. We also witnessed one of the several ambulance evacuations from Gaza that take place daily, every single day, several to maybe 10 or a dozen different ambulance evacuations taking Palestinian patients out of the Gaza Strip to be treated in our hospitals. And when we were there, we witnessed in an ambulance that was donated by people from the United States, two bodies being brought back, people who didn't make it, even not sanctification of the dead, but a respect for the dead to bring them back. There was a story talking about the flotilla a little over three years ago. Somewhere along the way, I don't remember the specifics of it, someone was trying to bring blood into Gaza, and the Magen David Adom Blood Services got involved because it was packed poorly. It was not to stop blood from getting in and saving lives. No, all the more so. We got involved in order to make sure it was transported and shipped safely.
Mm.
That's what we're about.
And when let's say there's a baby or child suffering, Palestinian, that can't be cared for properly, and he's brought, say, from Gaza into an Israeli hospital, is this normally done gratis?
Truthfully, I don't know who pays. It's often gratis. You hear about those situations, but maybe the EU or Red Cross or somebody gets involved.
But in other words, it's not a matter of, well, this poor Palestinian family can't afford the medical care.
No, that doesn't happen.
All right, so I'm looking here at a picture, which is a lovely, wonderful picture until you know the rest of the story. Daniel Cantor Woltz, tell me the story behind the picture.
So when I started in this job, I created an opportunity for Americans to come and donate blood. That was the spring of 2006. And the first time I organized a blood drive for American tourists in Jerusalem was middle of April. It happened to be during the week of Passover. We had 37 Americans show up. Not only Americans, because it included, by the way, hotel workers in the David Citadel Hotel, and many of them were Arab workers who wanted to come and donate blood as well. That same afternoon, there was a terror attack in South Tel Aviv. If I'm not mistaken, three people were killed immediately, a number of others injured. One of the most severe injuries was this young man, Daniel Cantor Woltz, from Florida, who required 80 units of blood in order to survive. As his father explained to me, they were squeezing the blood into him in order to keep him alive while the doctors fixed what was broken. And you can imagine bleeding out 80 units that had to be continually replaced was devastating. Sadly, Daniel died a month later. He was in and out of consciousness. His parents gave me their blessing and okay to tell this story, to write it, to put it on our website. And bringing terror in Tel Aviv to the footsteps of the U.S. Capitol, Daniel was also Eric Cantor's cousin.
Eric Cantor's cousin, and Eric Cantor is the cousin of a friend of mine, Ron Cantor, who lives in Israel with his wife, Alana. And so he's an American that was just over in Israel.
Having a falafel.
Yeah, so they're just family outing and the victim of terrorism. And this is just when you're getting started over there.
Yeah.
We've only got about a minute now, but obviously, this is a job. You're doing something that you're coordinating, administrating. But bottom line, these are human lives.
Correct.
How heavily did this weigh on you?
To the point that when I flew to the States and asked my mother, who had been in a lot of critical medical situations, what can we bring Daniel, because he's going to be a long time recovering, and I wanted to bring him something personally as a gift. And unfortunately, by the time I came back home to Israel, at the time he had already died. But I take Daniel and his story and his family with me, and his family is suing the Bank of China now because they're the ones who laundered the money to facilitate the terrorists doing what they did.
Really extraordinary. And friends, as I'm sitting here with Jonathan, although he's told this story over and over, his eyes are teared up. These are human beings, human lives. God cares about every human life, whether the person is a Jewish Israeli or a Palestinian Muslim. We come back, I want to talk about practical things that you can do. You say, boy, I want to make a difference. I want to help Israel. What are things I could do? We're going to talk about some practical things you can do. And then I just want to get Jonathan's perspective. I asked him during a break if I had his permission to do this. He suggests, I want to raise a number of controversial issues, things that are happening with Israelis and Palestinians, perceptions that much of the world has about what's happening there. I just want to ask his perspective on the ground. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. To my delightful surprise, my guest that was going to join me towards the end of this hour arrived early. His flight got in early, and he made his way up here. He's originally American, but living in Israel the last 9 years, Jonathan Feldstein. And he is the representative to the States from Israel for the Israeli Red Cross. And just so you understand this, every ambulance in Israel is going to have this logo on it, the particular distinct logo, which Jonathan can explain to us in a moment. But it's not just a matter of special services that the Red Cross provides, but every ambulance, so all the ambulatory services throughout the country, first responders to tragedy and crisis and terrorist attack, all the same organization. And because often there's the pressure of war on Israel and casualties at higher numbers than other nations could relate to, the constant need for blood, it's everything is intensified living in the land, for better or for worse. If you have a question for my guest, especially if you've heard things about Israel or Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, or issues of injustice, or whatever, or you think that Israel is some kind of evil occupier, and you'd like to find out, let's separate truth from fiction. My guest is a great person to do it with because he's not a polemicist for the government or for Israeli tourism. He's a man given to acts of compassion and trying to rally Christians around that. 866-34-TRUTH if you do have a question. So, Jonathan, your specific mission right now, what brings you to the States and the main thing you're pursuing, tell our listeners about it.
So we established about a little under 2 years ago a program called Heart to Heart, a subset, if you will, of American Friends of Magen David Adom, which has its mission to bring Americans, specifically Christians, but not exclusively, to support the Israel Blood Services. There's blood is needed everywhere. Yesterday I was in the D.C. area and I heard a PSA from the Red Cross that there's a need for blood. Now, we can't typically do that in Israel because if there were a need for blood and we put it out there on the radio, live like we're doing this now, then some of our neighbors might use that as an opportunity to go say, well, have a slice of pizza and blow myself up, and there wouldn't be enough blood to treat the survivors. So we are saving lives, which is a sacred job, sometimes with one hand tied behind our back. So we're giving Americans the opportunity to really come down to the most core unit, the core component of life, which is blood, and helping to sponsor an individual unit of blood that will help us save up to 3 different Israeli lives and bring it right down to that level. If someone wants to do something tangible, lots of different churches and ministries are buying in with us as partners to take this program heart to heart and promote it as their own program to save lives and bless Israel. It's really beautiful.
All right. So specifically then, someone's listening and they say, well, I think I can do that. I'd like to be involved with that. And, you know, for Christians, blood has many meanings. And, I remember first going to a church service as a 16-year-old heroin shooting LSD-using Jewish rock drummer and going to a church service, and they're singing about, you know, are you washed in the blood? And it's a little bit different. I wasn't used to stuff like that. But we understand from the Jewish or Christian viewpoint the sacredness of the blood And as it says in Leviticus 17, the life of the flesh is in the blood. So you're saying, exactly, this is not just a spiritual principle. That's what it's saying. Human life, when the blood is lost, life is lost. So someone's listening now, maybe a pastor's listening, an individual listening, they say, I'd like to do something. I mean, do I go to the local blood bank and get blood and then find the box and ship it over to Israel? What am I supposed to do? How do I help?
So we have a website. It's afmda.org/heart-to-heart.
Give that again.
AFMDA, American Friends Magen Dovida Dome, .org/heart-to-heart, one word. And they can go there. We have these tremendous videos about some of the people whose lives have been saved. Actually, there's one tremendous video called The Gift of Life, which is Christians donating blood in Israel, speaking about it as a sacred calling, as a sacred opportunity to be able to give back and save lives in Israel. I think it's one of our best, and exposing some of the extra threats that Israel faces and the need, because there's always got to be a safe and abundant blood supply in the state of Israel. Unlike the state of North Carolina, if there were to be a blood shortage here, you can get blood from South Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia, and a number of other states. Not only do we not have that luxury in Israel, but more typically than not, it's those neighboring states that are trying to bleed us.
So in other words, if you had a blood shortage, you could not appeal to the people of Iran to
send it over on one of their Shahab rockets with the nuclear device.
Or perhaps Hamas in Gaza. Yeah. Could you, or maybe Muslim Brotherhood, well, they're struggling now in Egypt. But
no, we're on our own.
Right, so you're surrounded. Now, I'm sure there are people of goodwill in each nation, but the governments as a whole, and then the posture of most of the people would be hostile. As you said, they're not going to donate blood. They're out to bleed you. Again, the website?
afmda.org/heart-to-heart.
All right, so churches can get involved. Individuals can get involved. We've got a couple minutes before our next break, and then I want to get to some calls in the next half hour. But tell me, a moving story where life was actually saved because of your organization, where it was one of these life and death critical things, and because of the nature of everyone ready to respond and living with the possibility of terror and the backup you have. Tell us a good story where the person is alive to smile at us today.
Well, I'll tell you a story that has a sad and a happy ending. A guy by the name of Dr. David Applebaum, who used to be a volunteer with Magen Dovida Dome, also the head of emergency medicine in one of Jerusalem's more established hospitals, took his daughter Nava out for coffee the night before her wedding and were in the wrong place at the wrong time when a terrorist decided to show up and blow himself up. They were both killed immediately. Everyone in Jerusalem knew that something had happened to Dr. Applebaum because he was always the first one on the scene when there would be a terror attack, whether at the terror attack or in the hospital waiting to do the triage and save the patients. And that's a grieving story. It's a horrible story, but one of the things that's come out of it that's so wonderful is Dr. Applebaum's second daughter has become a paramedic and an ambulance driver following her father's footsteps, and she's an extraordinary woman and gives me great, great inspiration to really what the future of Israel's about.
Really? Wow. You know, I knew the first part of that story. In fact, I remember getting up and telling our congregation with tears.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to know a picture of what it's like there? And I didn't know the rest of the story. So rather than her becoming hardened, she redoubled her efforts following her father's footsteps.
There was one of the more recent terror attacks that I lived in Israel through was outside the central bus station in Jerusalem. Actually, a Christian woman from the UK was killed. And one of the photos that was in the newspaper on the internet that day was one of Dr. Applebaum's daughter. And I helped narrate it for my colleagues here in the States. I noticed that she wasn't wearing her uniform, which she had taken off to use as a tourniquet.
Really?
To save someone else.
Wow. All right, friends, you can help in a frontline way. Go to afmda.org/heart-to-heart as one word, the word to, heart-to-heart, afmda.org, heart-to-heart. We'll be back with your calls and more with my guest, Jonathan Feldstein.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, as you all know, if you listen to the broadcast, Thursday is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but because it's live radio and because it's my own show, we can switch things around. So this week, Thursday, is still going to be Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but I have a thoroughly Jewish guest from Israel involved in something thoroughly Jewish as well, namely saving lives. I'm joined by Jonathan Feldstein. He is the representative of American Friends of Magen David Adom, which is the Israeli Red Cross. And I want to talk about some controversial perceptions about Israel. And Jonathan's a perfect person to talk to because he's a man of goodwill. He's not a politician. He's not with the military. And he's not part of an alleged propaganda machine. He's a man interested in saving lives. That's why he relocated from America to Israel with his family. 866-34-TRUTH. I will get to the phones shortly. But Jonathan, there's a familiar logo that anyone that ever sees an ambulance in Israel is going to see. What's the logo on that ambulance?
The Red Star of David.
The Red Star of David. Yeah. So for my Christian listeners, a red cross would not exactly work well or be a kind of warm, positive symbol, but the Red Star of David is the equivalent there. Every ambulance in Israel is marked by this.
And every blood bag.
Every blood bag is marked by this. There's something very unique in Israel because you have the mix of the more secular Israelis and the very religious Jews. And you'll sometimes see a picture, there's a horrific terrorist attack, there's a bus that's ripped to shreds, and again, I've never been at a scene like this. Americans were recently touched by it with the Boston Marathon bombings and before that 9/11, but it's something that we're less familiar with unless people have been overseas in war. But the unique thing in Israel is you have these ultra-Orthodox Jews, these religious Jews that are also there on the scene. What are they doing there?
There's an organization that has a very sacred job, which is to pick up all human remains from not just a terror attack, but when there's that incident where flesh and blood are literally blown all over and you see people with cotton swabs cleaning the streets with every drop of blood, because we say the life is in the blood, and it's something we just don't let, we don't wash it down the sewer. It also, every piece of flesh should receive a proper burial.
And to leave it out would also be defiling,
yeah,
in that way as well. So if you ever see a picture like that and you see these men with beards, and that's actually what they're doing. And that is an expression of Jewish thinking, which in many ways is very holistic, yes, in terms of its approach to life. And then what you're doing would be another articulation of Jewish ethics, would it not?
We try and prevent people from getting into that situation.
Right, exactly so. All right, Jonathan, we've got folks just tuning in now. The website for the project you're involved with, I want to get to some calls and some controversies on the other side of the break, but the website and the project again, just for our new listeners.
Heart to Heart, the website is afmda.org/heart-to-heart, one word.
All right, and friends, after being asked to do this for many years, for the first time, I will be leading a tour to Israel. Put this on your calendar, May 20th to 30th. May 20th to 30th. Just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and you'll find it right on the home page, our tour. You want to get involved now. You want to send in a deposit now. I'll be joined by my colleague, Dr. Michael Radelnik. He's a professor of Jewish Studies at Moody Bible Institute, and he's an expert tour guide as well. We'll be doing special teaching in different locations. We even plan to do live broadcast of the Line of Fire with you, our listening audience, there in person on the tour, asking questions. So you'll get to see all of the key holy sites and historic parts of the country. You'll hook up with Messianic Jewish believers. We'll interact with Palestinian Christians. It'll be a tour like none you've ever been on, or if you've ever been to the land, the one you want to join in on. So go to askdrbrown.org and click right on the homepage for our tour to Israel. Join in now. That's May of next year.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is what my guest Jonathan Feldstein writes in the Jewish Press. Israel lives in a dangerous neighborhood sandwiched by enemies to its north and south. The mission of saving lives has to be immune from politics and political games. If people have legitimate issues with Magen David Adom, the Israeli Red Cross, or the government's international diplomacy, they should voice them in the proper form and not misrepresent the facts. Jonathan, what facts have been misrepresented? What myths are circulating that need to be corrected and addressed?
So sadly, despite being the chosen people, we're not always the most holy people, and there are people who have political agendas. And what happened a couple of years ago when the when Magen David Adom was accepted as Israel's member of the Red Cross, undoing a injustice of some six decades. So there was an agreement also that only ambulances owned and operated by Magen David Adom were allowed to bear the logo. It's like someone putting a Nike swoosh on a shirt and selling it without the proper legal right to do so. And until that point, there had been not a free-for-all, that's a misrepresentation. Ambulances that were dispatched by Magen David Adom typically used the Magen David Adom logo because they were often older ambulances operating in industrial areas or small communities like where I live, and they maintained the logo. So logos were taken off of ambulances on both sides of the Green Line. Many people were misrepresenting it, that it was only something happening in Judea and Samaria. And as a result, they said that essentially Magen David Adom had given in and given up the national symbol, the Red Star of David, to the Red Cross. And that's A, factually not true, and it was a gross misrepresentation. It's something I still get confronted with from time to time. And people need to understand that if you're in the state of Israel, you need an ambulance, you call 101, and one of several hundred ambulances will be dispatched to where you are, period.
Got it. All right, one of our listeners called in and was wondering how to convey the importance of Israel to Christians in America. Is it just a matter of, look, it's political and military, Israel's our best ally there. Is there a deeper connection between Israel and America? Why should Christians really, really care? Are we just getting involved in an ethnic war between cultures and blindly siding with one group? Why should Christians really care about Israel?
Well, I'm not a Christian, so I don't want to come across preaching to Christians what Christians should or shouldn't do. But from my understanding of Christianity, it's really very simple. God says in Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless you. There's much other sources of scripture, both Old and New Testament, where that's reiterated in different words, but essentially that God made a covenant with Abraham. There's a new covenant, and that's terrific. But that new covenant is based on the old covenant. And for me, as an Orthodox Jew, it doesn't make sense that a Christian wouldn't understand that we may have differences on a whole lot of things. Now, I'm not talking about Jews and Christians religiously. I'm talking about looking at Israel and saying, okay, no, it's not a perfect society yet. But rather than buying into the lies and claims of apartheid and other sorts of lies, boycotting and divesting from Israeli things, I think it makes sense from an outsider's perspective that a Christian can't help but love and bless Israel. And then as brothers and sisters and friends, we say, okay, but this is troubling me, and work together. But a wholesale boycott or divestment from or calling an Israel apartheid state, I mean, that would be like saying black is white. It's just not true.
All right. You living in Israel with Palestinian neighbors, where you live in Judea, Samaria, which normally is referred to as the West Bank, and then in a derogatory way, the occupied territories. You hear these charges of apartheid. You hear these charges of even more extreme ethnic cleansing. And then you know in the state of Israel as a whole that you have about 20% of the population is Arab. You have about 10% of the Knesset, the parliament, is Arab. You have one of the Supreme Court justices is Arab. How do you personally feel? And how do other Israelis feel when they hear these charges of apartheid, ethnic cleansing? you know, what is just frustration or what?
There's a great amount of frustration, but it's so ridiculous. Like I use the analogy, it's like saying someone saying black is white. You look at that person as a crackpot. Black is black and white is white, and they're very different. They're opposite ends of the spectrum. So if somebody says Israel's an apartheid state, it's ridiculous. Israeli Arabs have full equal, you just said it, 10% of the country, one of the Supreme Court justices. Some of my very, very, very dear friends who are like family, Christian Israeli Arabs, their son plays in the Israel national soccer team. I mean, Israeli Arabs are integrated at every level of society, educationally, professionally. Yeah, we're not perfect people, and there's certainly discrimination on a human basis, but as a state, no. When the state of Israel is taking in Syrians who are our enemies by their choice, who are injured in the horrible civil war that's going on in Syria, saving more than 100 people who have come across the border, or African refugees. Think about it. A Muslim refugee from Sudan finds safety in the Jewish state of Israel. And with all of the things that says, and honestly, social problems that things like that create, Israel doesn't have the resources to be absorbing hundreds of thousands of refugees from Africa. But go in any major city or any hotel in Eilat or Tel Aviv, and you'll see Sudanese and other African refugees who are working, who are subsisting, and have Israel to thank for that. So apartheid, not even close.
All right. When people think about Gaza, we know ongoing terrorist attacks. America, at least at this point, still recognizes Hamas as a terrorist organization. There's obviously a lot of religious oppression for people living there, and yet there are positive associations with Hamas for other work that they do, and therefore they've been voted in. But let's just get a little history here. If we go back, say, 20 years into Gaza, and you had Israelis living there, what was the society like? What was Israeli life like in Gaza? And then what happened to those people who were living there for many years?
So I can't speak about 20 years ago, but I can speak about 1986 when I was a student in Israel and we spent lots of times going in the West Bank and interacting. And the way I perceive things from a Jewish perspective, looking at Palestinians, as many of the older generation wish for the day of the good old occupation, because now what's happened is you have, and I say that in quotes,
yes.
It's fictitiously, but now today we have a religious extremism that's driving everything, that's threatening good Muslims and Christian Palestinians, and that's a horrible situation. I remember renting bikes in Jericho and riding through the desert. That would be an unheard of thing today, because you never know what terrorist is going to be walking around the corner with a knife and decide to stab you and take your bike. I mean, these are things that it's almost a black and white situation today in terms of the safety, security. Back then, without the advent of suicide terrorist attacks that took place as frequently as they did in the early part of the first decade of this century, you would have the ability, albeit with different color license plates, for Palestinians from Gaza and the West Bank to drive around all of Israel freely in their own car. Life was very different then.
Mm. And then when Israel said, okay, we're going to give Gaza back to the Palestinians, it forcefully uprooted Israelis who had been living
Correct.
There for years. Very traumatic for the whole
very
nation.
Very traumatic.
What happened to them once they were uprooted?
They were poorly resettled, if they were, and unfortunately the state of Israel was not prepared for that. That was a very impulsive, not a planned decision. There's been a lot of post-trauma for the several thousand Israelis who went through that, still.
Right. It's still an open wound.
Absolutely.
In many lives. And yet there were no conditions on the withdrawal.
Correct.
And as a reward, Israel now has Hamas as a neighbor hurling rockets into Israel. And if Israel tries to do war on terror, now they are the evil occupiers. It's such a perverse reading of what's actually happening.
Well, as someone said to me, when Palestinians kill Israelis, they win. When Israelis kill Palestinians, they win.
Yeah, Palestinians,
yes.
Both ways. All right, living in Israel, do you personally believe this is the reality? As Prime Minister Netanyahu said, and this is now a common saying, that if the Palestinians were to put down their weapons, there would be no war, no more war. If the Israelis were to put down their weapons, there would be no more Israel.
No doubt. no hesitation.
Got it. All right. I want to talk about the prisoner exchange that's been negotiated and some action with the European Union decisions towards Israel. When we come back. The website to get involved, to help with blood drive, to literally help in a tangible way to save Israeli lives and Palestinian lives, AFMDA, AFMDA.org/heart-to-heart. All right? Go there, find out what you can do as an individual, as a church, as a pastor. We'll be right back with Jonathan Feldstein.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire today. The first hour, I did practical teaching on holiness, keys to overcome sin, keys to live a life pleasing to the Lord. You can listen to that in its entirety by going to AskDrBrown.org later today and clicking on the latest audio. To my delightful surprise, my guest that was going to just join me the end of this hour has been with me now an entire hour. In fact, we basically met on the air, Jonathan Feldstein, born in America but has lived in Israel with his family the last 9 years and is the Israeli representative for the Red Cross of Israel, better known as the Magen David Adom. It is the Red Jewish Star of Israel. And we'll tell you how you can get involved in a practical way and help out, literally, how to save lives. One act of donating blood can literally save three lives. Jonathan, right now, John Kerry has been involved with trying to push peace talks again with the Palestinians. And a couple things I want to discuss. You live in Ephrat, which is Judea Samaria, which could theoretically be part of a Palestinian state. And Palestinian leaders have made very clear, let alone Hamas, but Mahmoud Abbas with Palestinian Authority, made very clear that they want it, in the old German word, Judenrein, no Jews, no settlements. Are these settlements an obstacle to peace, or is there a problem with the Palestinian mindset, or would you live there if it was a Palestinian state?
I would definitely not live there if it was a Palestinian state. The settlements, which are just, the pejorative is called settlements, they're Jewish communities in the biblical land of Israel, and they're not an obstacle to peace. The people, as I said earlier in the show, we coexist often very well with our Palestinian neighbors, and not only are they not an obstacle to peace, I think that coexistence allows for a humanizing of the relationship between us. So we break down barriers. We can look at each other as people who have human dignity and respect, and they want to work and bring home a paycheck to put food on the table, just like I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really that simple. If they say, the only reason I can give legitimacy to the claim that settlement is an obstacle to peace is because they don't give validation for an Israeli or a Jewish presence as an autonomous presence in what was any of Palestine, the British and Roman term, the land of Israel. And therefore, if they don't give any justification for it, that means they still want back Tel Aviv and Haifa.
Mm-hmm. All right, so right now, part of the negotiations, as often happens, Israel releases prisoners. In this case, over 100 prisoners.
Yes.
Some have been in prison for many years, but many of them engaged in serious acts of terror, taking lives, and this is normally a Palestinian demand. In some cases, those released have then reappeared in other terrorist attacks later on. How does this feel to the people of Israel? Here you're involved in saving lives. You know, if there can be peace with your neighbors, that's ultimately going to save more lives, at least theoretically, if there could be a true and lasting peace as opposed to just a formal one on paper. But you also know that in releasing terrorists, there are issues of justice, there are open wounds now for the families, and the potential that these people could go back to terrorist activities. What's the emotion of your average Israeli about these kinds of things?
The average Israeli is very split, but the emotion, there's no question that there's an emotion. There's a recognition that the people who've been released, who are hardcore terrorists with blood on their hands, who have killed Israelis, we have a great amount of respect and caring for the loved ones of the people who were killed. But as I think as the Prime Minister said and demonstrates, Israel has to make painful sacrifices in order to get to peace, because ultimately, and you just said it very succinctly, ultimately we're there about saving lives. And if we could get to a situation where there really was peace, or shy of peace, coexistence with that had absence of war and terror, and we were able to save lives as a result of that, I can make the case. What's perverse to me is to release 100 plus prisoners who killed Israelis just to woo the Palestinians to sit down and talk with us.
Right. So there is that deep desire for it. And then lastly, there's a video that's getting a lot of play in some Christian circles, and it shows some Orthodox Jews in Hebron, and they're marching down the street shouting death to the Arabs and things like that. How widespread is that sentiment and feeling in Israel?
It's very fringe. I mean, I haven't seen that video, but that's fringe. There are people to the right and left of all societies, and that's an expression of a more right-wing fringe. Some of my neighbors will concur with that kind of emotion, but won't go out there and actively rub salt in the wound and make it more unnecessarily unpleasant.
Got it. And again, Jonathan gave me permission to ask these questions, which are uncomfortable questions, and I didn't prime him on answers. I was confident with him being a civil-minded Israeli-American Jew what his answers would be, because I know these to be real answers. And friends, John writes, let us not love in word, but in deed and in truth. A lot of you listening say, I love Israel. I love the Jewish people. Many of you pray for Israel on a daily basis. Some of you have been on tours to Israel, like the one we're leading next year. And that's all wonderful and that's all commendable. But what could you actually do? Would you give your blood for Israel? You say, die for Israel? Oh, no. Give your blood. Give your blood, or help others give blood. Here's what you can do, and literally live with this notion, I'm helping save lives, literally, in Israel. Go to afmda.org. It's an American Friends of Magen David Adom. Matt, make sure we've got that posted. afmda.org/heart-to-heart. Spell out heart to heart. And you'll be able to find out what you can do, how you can get involved, individuals, churches, leaders, denominations, and we can really make a difference in a practical way. And this blood will give life to Israelis and Palestinians. Friends, let me encourage you to visit our website, askdrbrown.org. Askdrbrown.org. Right on the homepage, you can find out about our tour of Israel, the first tour I'm ever leading, with a gifted Messianic Jewish scholar teacher with me, Michael Rudelnik. So you'll have the benefit of the tours, you'll have the benefit of connecting with believers on the ground, you'll have the benefit of special teaching sessions we'll be doing. So it'll be like a tour like no other. All the info on my homepage, askdrbrown.org. We also have a special resource offer where you can get my most important book about revival and spiritual renewal and download entire teaching series free when you get the book. So that's all at askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, the ultimate expression of love as our Messiah, who literally gave his blood for a dying, sinning world. We can join together with the Israeli Red Cross and give our blood to literally save lives.